Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of, you want to join me on this?
What the hell?
Yeah. How?
Matt, what the Matt? Matt Atchity with us right now from Movie Phone, general manager over there. Used to be with Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. And you know, I'm glad that you called the show What the Hell. I had a show, we have a new show now, but I used to have a movie review show with Ben Mankiewicz and Christy Lemire, who was with AP,
and
Alonzo Duraldi, and it was called What the Flick.
Oh, there you go.
That was our movie review
show.
Yeah,
it's very clever.
Now it's called Breakfast All Day.
Oh, that's I like that. You know,
well, yeah, everybody loves Breakfast All Day.
Hal is one of those names that you can do. It's hysterical.
Exactly.
Happy Halloween.
It's a hell of a show.
It's a hell of a show. I have a lot of fun with my name. And even selfies, I call Halfies.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I mean, I use this name. Look, parents gave me the name. I'm using it, right?
Exactly.
You know, I want to talk to you about a couple of things. One is, you know, movie critics, sometimes we don't know how to take them. Sometimes critics will say, it's a terrible movie. I go to a movie and I love it. Sometimes a critic goes to a movie, says it's a wonderful movie. I get there, I fall asleep. You know, what is this thing with the critic community that we sort of have this strange relationship with?
You know, the way I've always thought about it is that a critic, ideally a critic is looking at a movie and doing one of two things, hopefully both at the same time. The review is this movie the best version of itself, right? And then the other thing is, does this movie do what it set out to do? And so a movie review, as Roger Ebert used to write, is it's not – a review shouldn't be telling you what the movie's about. It should be really talking about how the movie is what it's about. And that's – a different context than necessarily saying, oh, I liked it or I didn't like it, right? There are plenty of schlock movies that I love, absolutely. I love, for instance, the old 80s version of Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a good movie.
Yeah.
Right? But I love it. I love every one of the Fast and Furious movies. Love them, right? They're not good. I mean, the later ones get good, but the first few are kind of...
It's different strokes for different folks.
Right.
You know, but beauty's in the eye of the beholder,
right,
or whatever they say.
But, you know, the classic idea of... It's arts criticism, right? So arts criticism is more... It's more the context and the discussion about the art form, whether or not you liked it is a different question. Now, often they overlap. The Venn diagram of enjoyment versus quality, there is a fair amount of overlap there in my head, but they are fundamentally different questions is kind of the way I thought, you know, like music, right? Like I can, you know, I used to DJ like as, you know, mixing records and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that gave me a new appreciation for what the DJs would call the club bangers, right? Which is the stuff that gets everybody out on the dance floor. And it made me think like, oh, okay. I was not originally a Lady Gaga fan, but when I would be DJing, I would see how that would get everybody on the floor. And I think, okay, that song's doing what it needs to do. I don't necessarily think it's great art, but it's doing what it needs to do. Now, can you necessarily compare that to a Beethoven symphony? They're fundamentally different things, but, you know, is some of pop music as, you know, important within its own milieu, so to speak, as symphonies were in a different type of art form? So ultimately, that's my long-winded way of saying that enjoying a movie and review and kind of looking at criticism are different things. Now, the other thing I used to always tell people is it's totally okay to like movies that the critics don't like. That doesn't make you a bad person.
Yeah. You know, you stepped on something there that reminded me of something I hadn't thought about in a long time. I used to DJ parties. Now, this goes back to when I was a teenager. And we're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of about 100, 125 years ago.
Oh, so that was still on cylinders.
We started off when they were doing hieroglyphics.
Okay.
So, yeah, but I used to call – my middle name is Lewis. So I used to call it the Hal Lewis Show, Dance, and Earache. I mean, I've always had this weird thing with, you know, self-effacing humor,
right?
I guess, you know. And I hadn't thought about that in a long time. So thanks for reminding me about
Lewis,
Show, Dance, and Earache.
Nice.
Yeah, that guy, we could have called this podcast that, you know, Show, Dance,
right,
and Earache.
Right, the Earache.
You know, you may be listening to this before or after this year's Oscars. We're recording it before the 2020 Oscars. Well, who do you like?
You know, I will tell you the race that I'm most interested in is the Chiefs.
Yeah. The Chiefs against
the Chiefs
Miami.
The Chiefs against San Francisco this year.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
Right, totally going off.
Super Bowl's in Miami.
Right,
yeah.
No, as a kid who grew up in Kansas City, I'm a big Chiefs fan. So that's, but, you know, as far as the Oscars, there's some gimmies this year. Renee Zellweger as Judy, I think, is the one that's a walk. I'm looking for some interesting stuff. I always like when there's surprises at the show. Yeah. I'm always nothing will ever top that Moonlight surprise, right? Like, we'll never top the year that.
Well, that Moonlight surprise was amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, but also, that was a great win. I loved that movie. And one of the things I loved about that movie is that was a story. That's a story you never see, and a story that I had never occurred to. That was the last movie I had seen at the Toronto Film Festival that year. And I was glad it was the last one because I thought nothing's going to top this. That's a terrific film. So I'd love to see some surprises. Like, you know, for Best Picture, I would love to see, like, I think that this is an extreme long shot of all of them, but I'd kind of love to see Jojo Rabbit get in there.
Would you really?
I would.
Let's pause there for a second. Jojo Rabbit is a story about?
A story about a young boy who is in Germany during, you know, the Nazi Germany, and he's a big fan of Hitler, and he's got this imaginary friend that is Hitler, played by the director Taika Waititi. And his mother is played by Scarlett Johansson, and he goes off to this kind of Nazi youth camp, and Sam Rockwell plays the guy that's running that camp, and it's definitely a send-up. It's got, you know, it feels almost similar to some of the stuff that Mel Brooks was doing in his heyday with things, you know, it's a different style of humor, but it's in the same vein as, say, Blazing Saddles. And Waititi's definitely taking on things that I think a lot of filmmakers would be afraid to. And I'm a big fan with the Academy going out on a limb and picking
things.
That's daring. It is daring, right? But I'm a big fan of when the Academy recognizes somebody taking chances and not giving us the same old, same old. Now, that being said, you know, and this is not a knock in this movie because I loved it, Ford versus Ferrari, I could totally see winning Best Picture because that's the type of movie that Hollywood's been making for decades.
You know, award season, it started to look like 1917. Then all of a sudden, Screen Actors Guild Awards come along, and it's Parasite. Do you think we're going to see a different thing each time?
I think we do. I think that 1917 is a walk for cinematography. Absolutely. That's some of Roger Deakins' best work, and he's a great cinematographer. But over and above just the long takes and the mechanics of that, the lighting in that, you know, once you start studying photography and especially shooting live video or film, you understand what the lighting challenges are. And there are scenes that are single takes, not where they, you know, you'll see from time to time somebody walk in front of the camera and that's where they obviously did their take. But you'll see that camera following the two main characters from sunlight and then they go underground where it's dark. And you still manage to see everything, and then they come back out sometimes, all within the same take, and that's an amazing achievement.
One of the things that I thought was particularly interesting this year was Knives Out, and I love the movie, but the thing is that it wasn't built on CGI. Right. It wasn't about fancy music. It was a really simple shot movie. You're with them the whole time from beginning to end. And I thought that was interesting cinematography.
Yeah, that's a great movie and great performances there. Daniel Craig is really, really fun.
Now, he really is.
There's rumors that there might be a sequel about that character.
I've heard that.
Which I'm totally there. You know, you can see Rian Johnson kind of getting back to basics on that after having done a Star Wars movie. And that's I hesitate to call it smaller, but it's an easier, maybe not even easier. It's a different scale, right?
I think when I went into that, I was expecting Clue. And I thought this was way more interesting.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, they reference Clue in the movie, right?
Yeah,
there's,
yeah.
And I think you can't get around that, but it's a really fun mystery, and it it's sharper than I think Clue was. Now, I'm a big fan of the old Clue movie. It's super fun. That's one of the ones my friends and I quote to each other a lot. But it's a real, you know, Knives Out is a sharp movie, pardon
me. Sharp movie? Cutting edge?
Exactly.
Got it.
Exactly.
Okay. I had heard that Johnson, right? Yeah. That he had told Daniel Craig, that who wanted to have freedom in his role, do what it is you want to do. That he gave him license to do that Southern character. And I thought, I wouldn't say he necessarily convinced me that he was from Alabama or something, but I thought he was an interesting character.
Well, and that's not the first time we've seen him do that. There's a movie from a few years back called Logan Lucky. I don't know if you caught that.
I don't remember seeing it. It's a
Steven Soderbergh movie, and the Joker at the time was kind of that it's Redneck Ocean's 11, and it's these two characters – played by Channing Tatum and Adam Driver, these brothers that are the Logan boys. And it's a heist movie. And one of the people they bring into this heist is this cellmate of one of theirs.
I saw this, played
by Daniel Craig. Right. And he's a nut job in that movie. Yeah. He's bonkers.
Yeah.
But he's got this really heavy Southern accent, and he's really funny.
Let's talk for a minute about the business of movie making.
Okay.
Because the whole paradigm is changing. The whole business model seems to be in flux at the moment. Box office, not doing so great. Movie theaters starting to sell subscriptions to sort of, I think, compete with streaming. But what do you make of what's going on right now?
You know, it's... Every time, I mean, I feel like we're constantly having this discussion. It always reminds me of what William Goldman said, you know, the great screenwriter who gave us, among other things, Princess Bride. Nobody knows anything, right? I mean, that's his classic take on Hollywood. And you see a lot of things. I think where you've seen the studios go in some respects is that, and Disney's a great example of that, they are as interested in what we would call intellectual property as they are in anything else, and something where they can... you know, not just make movies, but make television shows and have a streaming offering and make toys around them. And there's a whole aspect of, like, how do we ultimately market this piece of property, which makes it tougher to get smaller movies made. But now we have companies like Netflix and Amazon filling the space that had kind of almost disappeared. These smaller movies, you know, if we didn't have a Netflix or an Amazon, you absolutely would not be seeing movies like Marriage Story, right? Right. Marriage Story would not get made, and those types of movies weren't getting made for a long time because everybody seemingly wanted either the really big blowout kind of giant event movie, or they wanted something that was super, super indie cheap that they could pick up and kind of be the really, really low budget. So I think it's a little all over the place. And I think where streaming is coming in is that it's giving more options. Where theater companies have a challenge is that there's more competition for people's attention than there's ever been. And I think that subscription piece of it is, I think that the theaters that are getting into that are smart, I think.
I think that a lot of people who may be listening may not be aware of what we're talking about. But, for instance, I happen to live near a Regal theater, a 16 cinema theater with an IMAX and all that. And so I pay, I think it's about $22, $23 a month. Well, that's basically the cost of two movies. So if you see three movies a month, or if you go to the movie one Saturday and you just go from one to the next, you've made your subscription worthwhile. It feels a little like wag the dog, because what's happening is that the industry is changing, making things like the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences deal with the Netflixes of the world.
Yeah, it is. And the other part of that too is the theaters, I think, have struggled with finding what's unique about that experience, right? Especially because if you look at the last 10 years, people's home entertainment systems are getting closer and closer to the quality that you see in the theater, right? I mean, with 4K and Ultra HD and the bigger and bigger screens and sharper images and better sound. Whereas for a long time, like, oh boy, if you had a 25-inch TV, you were something. But that didn't compare. But now you can get something approaching a cinema quality at home. However, affordable.
Yeah.
Right. But I think where the future lies is both studios and artists understanding how there is a unique experience as a movie watcher that comes from being in the theater versus being in your room at home, right? And it's a little, you know, at the risk of sounding almost touchy-feely, it's a different emotional experience.
But I think I would have doubled down on that because I know when I watch a movie at home or on my laptop or whatever it is, it's okay. I mean, I get it. But when I'm in the dark of a theater, especially, you know, a really nice theater, maybe an IMAX or even just a regular theater, 2D, but it's nice. It has good sound. The seats are comfortable. That was another thing that the theaters had to do in order to compete was give you nice seats to sit in, right, the recline back.
Yeah, I actually don't like the recliner seats. Yeah. I think that that's a little bit too
but
much.
But it was a way to get you to come in.
I think that's a focus on the wrong thing, though. I think in terms of, say, music, right, I can get a really good album that's really well produced and have really beautiful sound by a band that I love. But seeing them in concert is a completely different experience. Yeah. And you can't compare the sound because it's different experiences. And in fact, you will hear more of what you're trying to hear from that band at home than you will at a concert, right? No matter how good the sound is, because there's all this other noise and it's a different experience.
Right.
And there are some bands that maybe not notoriously, but are not as – they don't sound as good in concert as they do at home on the very produced album. That's not the point. The point is you are sharing the energy with everybody else there and seeing them live. And so I think that the future for exhibitors and people who own theaters is to remember that there are unique experiences to being in the theater, right? When you are in a theater – and this even happens at screenings, but – when you go and see a movie, that feeling when the lights go down before the movie starts, that is unique to being in a theater. Yeah. There is no other experience like that, right? And that feeling that when you come out of a great movie and the credits start rolling and it's just blown you away and it's almost this exhalation of relief, that's kind of unique.
Well, I like that idea of people applauding at the end of a movie and you go, wow, everybody else liked it just like me.
Right, right. And it's like, and everybody knows like, oh, they can't hear us, but you're still applauding because that's what we do sometimes.
I want to show you how easily amused or entertained I can be. I get excited watching the opening of IMAX. You are listening to, you know, it
reminds you why you're there.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's entertaining to me, too. I never thought the beginning of something like that would be entertaining, but I find it entertaining.
Well, what I noticed a few years back, and this goes back to being at Rotten Tomatoes and going to a lot of screenings, I would notice that really sharp publicity arms at studios would, for either a horror movie or a really broad comedy, they would have critics go to an audience that was, say, half full of what I would think of civilians, right? Regular people. Because the laughter that comes up in a comedy and the jumps that come up in a horror movie, that energy is infectious. And that's going to be so having those types of fans in there will give, I think a lot of times the professionals, helps them be in context of like, oh, right, okay. And it can make it scarier.
Okay, lightning round. Your favorite movie of all time?
I have to go with Star Wars. I saw Star Wars when I was 6 and a half. My mom took me to that. I have very distinct memories of my mother having gone to see it with my dad and coming back and saying, Matt, you are not going to believe what this movie is like. And she bought the soundtrack. Remember that big double album soundtrack with all the pictures? And she's telling me what all the pictures are. It's like, this is Darth Vader. He's a Dark Lord of the – how my mom picked all this stuff up, I don't know. but she was so excited to share that. And even at 6 and a half, I knew that movie – that was a feeling – you know, I was that type of kid that I knew everyone in the cast. I could practically read you the credits from memory. Like, I was that obsessed with that movie. And so to this day, I'm still kind of chasing the dragon of what that feeling of seeing that movie was like, and also trying to act like my mom did, which was, boy, I've seen this great movie and you have to see it. And then my other favorite movie that's a close second is the original Manchurian Candidate.
Yes.
And one of the reasons is that that was coming on cable. And my dad had me sit down and watch that with him. And I went into it completely cold. I'd heard of it, but I didn't know anything about it.
It was a remarkable
movie.
And
it's a terrific film. Yeah. And that always reminds me, going into something completely cold, as Roger Ebert used to talk about, is such a pure way of seeing a movie. But going back to Star Wars is – part of why I do what I do now. And so it was a great treat when Force Awakens came out a few years back. I got to take my mom to the premiere.
Oh, how
which
cool.
Which was so awesome.
Payback.
Yeah, it was so great. And so we were checking in. Harrison Ford's right behind us. As we're leaving, we're walking out right next to Carrie Fisher. And it was such a treat. It was such a treat.
Roger Ebert, I actually met him one time. And I was going to a tuxedo shop in Hollywood. Huh. And who's there? Roger Ebert. Yeah. And we had a couple nice words, but he was a pleasant man.
Oh, yeah.
He's a very pleasant guy. Favorite actor of all time?
That's a tough question. I will watch – there are certain actors that make everything better that you kind of watch in anything. And Willem Dafoe is one of those guys. Like, oh, Willem Dafoe's in this? All right, I'll give it a shot. Right? He's one of those guys that kind of makes everything a little more interesting.
You know, the favorite movie? Actress?
Favorite actress, who's been working a lot. You know, for a while it was Salma Hayek. I was really liking it, partly just because she's gorgeous. I'll admit that. But, I'm a big fan of hers. I really like what Saoirse Ronan's been doing lately. I think she's been doing
too,
a lot of interesting stuff. And then the other one, too, actually, and she's, to come full circle, Oscar nominee Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of hers. I think she does some really interesting stuff. And she doesn't, especially I think she's someone that I would like to see do more comedies. She doesn't do enough comedy, but when she does, she's terrific. So I'm a big fan of hers.
And last question, your favorite entertainment reporter?
Oh, absolutely, Hal Eisner.
Bam. All right. That's a good way to end the show because what the hell?
What the hell?
Right? Okay. Well, look, thanks, Matt. Always good. Come back and visit us again.
Oh, thanks.
And, if you haven't subscribed, please do. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.